here. Because we're a village, kind of a special village of this week, it starts to have the feel of a small group, kind of a large small group. But nevertheless, because there's not so many options as there are in the summer, we become a much more cohesive small group because of our numbers. So it might be good to hear everybody's name. We're going to be doing some very ancient practices in this hour this morning. Gifts to us from the early church, the first 5 centuries of the church. So these are traditions that have very, very deep roots, incredibly deep roots. And we'll also borrow a few things from some other traditions, particularly with ways to settle us and lead us into being focused and intentional and present in this moment. Ways in which to enter into a scripture passage or any other type of prayer, because really this is a prayer. This whole hour is a prayer. But sometimes we're not present. Our bodies are here, but our minds are on people we love that we're concerned about, or they're on something we left undone, or they're on a situation that worries us, or maybe even reliving the past. We're often not all here in this moment, now. So what we're going to do this morning is a practice that's actually borrowed from another tradition. There's a long history. Thich Nhat Hanh writes a lot about being aware of breath, because it's something that we do all the time. If we become more aware of our breath, we start to come into this moment and to be present. And if we're aware of our breathing, we're probably not in the past or in the future or with our concerns or our worries. So there's also another lovely Christian, Jewish Christian imagery for that, in that the word for spirit in Hebrew, ruach, is breath, and the word for spirit in Greek is pneuma, which is breath or wind. So it's life-giving, very much like without any breath, we wouldn't be. You'll meet Cliff later this morning. He's our physician in residence here. So from a spiritual perspective and a physical perspective, breath is essential. So I invite you to get comfortable, whatever that means for you. You can sit on the floor, you can cross your legs, you can whatever. In a position that you can sit in for maybe 5 minutes or so without needing to move. I invite you to just be aware of your breathing. Just notice it. And now if you'll take a slow, long, deep breath in, each morning we'll engage in a slightly different practice that can help bring us here. It's a wonderful thing to do before you begin your traditional prayers, or before you enter into looking at a scripture passage, to really arrive and to be present for whatever will happen in the next few moments. And we'll experiment with different ways, from mainly from the Christian tradition, but as this morning from the Buddhist tradition, there are some wonderful learnings, some real wisdom in other faith traditions too.
I have a question. How is this different from, how is concentrating on your breath help you be present? Because when I'm doing it, I'm thinking about the breath, and I guess I don't see the difference between thinking about the breath and thinking about anything else.
Okay. At least what's going on with the breath is happening in the present moment. It could very well be that thinking about other things aren't in this moment. I find I often drift into the past or the future. So it also gives your mind something to hang on to and to do. So it's not. You know how when we have external silence, then we notice all the noise here between our temples, you know, in our mind? So it kind of helps quiet our mind, where you're giving up one thing to focus on and one thing only. And it lets it subtle, hopefully. Sometime, I mean, I know people that will do this for half an hour before they ever start, just to get their mind settled, because it's usually pretty active. Mm-hmm. Does that help, Katie?
Yeah.
Is that? We'll be talking more about these things all this week, because part of it is to settle our bodies, but really it's about settling our minds. So what you brought up is exactly what we'll be exploring for the rest of this week. How many people have done a very old practice that involves it? We're going to use scripture every day this week, but it can, you can do this practice with almost anything, even the newspaper. Have done an ancient practice of the early church called Lectio Divina. How many have had experience with it? Okay, well, that's fine. It's another word for it. If you translate it, it just means holy reading. It means looking for the sacred in whatever you're reading. Well, we're going to be doing this every morning this week. If it feels unusual this first morning, probably by Wednesday it won't feel unusual anymore. And oftentimes by Friday, it feels like an old friend. And the practices we do to lead us into prayer may feel a little odd to some of you at the beginning, but again, by Wednesday or Friday, that gradually changes over time. And the amount of silence that we have will increase a little bit each week, because I know at the beginning, for some people, it's very new. We don't have a lot of silence in our world. But it's something that can become addictive over time. I'm going to read you a passage of scripture that is the scripture I usually use to open up something that's a week long, because it's a mesmerizing scripture. It's a scripture passage you could spend your whole life with, I think, and still learn new things about yourself and about the passage. It's a very well-known passage. I'm sure every one of you has heard this passage, and you know the ending, which can be a mixed blessing. Because if you know the ending, at least I then tend not to listen to the story as much, because my mind's, Katie already jumped ahead to the ending, I know what's going to happen. So that's why I invite you to enter into this like little kids at the library during story hour. You know how rapt they are? I'm sorry I don't have pictures. But they're just rapt, listening, because they don't know what's going to happen at the end. And it's a narrative, it's a story, and they're absolutely captivated. So pretend you don't know the ending. This is the first time you've ever heard this story, okay? And I invite you to just listen to it. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked. The bush was blazing, but it wasn't consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that Moses had turned aside to see, God called to him out of a bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." Then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you're standing is holy ground." And God said further, "I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. So before we start the lexia, the holy reading part of this, let's talk just a couple of minutes about this scripture to kind of set the context and to set the stage before we walk into it, because we're going to walk into the scripture and be a part of it. So, we have Moses. Moses has a bit of a checkered past. Who raised Moses? Why did he have an unusual upbringing?
The Pharaoh's daughter.
The Pharaoh's daughter. He grew up as Egyptian royalty. Yeah, and why was that? He wasn't Egyptian royalty.
No.
Not by birth. Who was he?
He was the Hebrew slave's son.
Yeah, he was a slave son. You remember the little cradle on the water that they was out of. So, raised as Egyptian royalty, the oppressors of his people who were the oppressed. Feel the tension already? The pull? Just in the first sentence of Moses. This is who Moses is, living between two worlds. Now, why in the world was he a Midian? What happened?
He killed some Egyptian, and so he fled for his life.
Yeah. And the reason he killed the Egyptian, was?
Well, the Egyptian was mistreating one of his people, the Hebrews.
So here's this tension. He's been raised as an Egyptian, not just any, but royalty. And he sees one of the Egyptian soldiers mistreating his kin, his biologic kin. Talk about tension. And he reacts, probably from his heart. Kills the Egyptian, has to flee. Ends up in Midian, gets married. Father-in-law Jethro has a lot of sheep. He's a priest. And so Moses is tending his father-in-law's flock. Now, that has some implications, yeah? Can you imagine this huge flock, all your father-in-law's wealth, and it's entrusted to you? Oops. Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of expectation here, right? So he's in the wilderness, and the text says he went beyond the wilderness. I've often wondered, well, what's beyond the wilderness? I've always puzzled over that.
Civilization.
Yeah, maybe civilization, yeah. So I asked my rabbi friend, how do you interpret that? If you're so fluent in Hebrew that you can put lots of different interpretations on that Hebrew word, how do you interpret that? And he goes, oh, it means further into the wilderness. Which makes a whole lot of sense. So not only has he gone into the wilderness, but he's ventured even further into the wilderness. Now, what's wilderness like? Just words.
Holden Village.
That's a really nice wilderness day.
I think there's
good in wilderness, and I think Gay just started us there. So thank you.
But desert is beautiful. Wilderness.
It's beautiful.
But I think it's gorgeous.
What else is wilderness?
Without people.
No people. Solitude.
Mm-hmm. A place beyond words.
Thanks, Eileen. A place beyond words.
No, it's just dangerous. Usually.
Dangerous. Who else lives in the wilderness? Beasts.
You can get lost.
Yeah.
You can get lost. You know, there's no paths. There's no directional signs. There's no cairns in the desert. Yeah, you can get really lost. Anything else? Can we grow our own food?
Barren. It's barren.
It's rather barren. Yeah.
Not enough rain.
There's not enough water. It's barren. We can't grow our own crops. Do you kind of get the flavor that we're not in control in the wilderness? And we can't even provide for ourselves in the wilderness. Somebody else or something else needs to provide for us. Okay? So this is the flavor of where Moses is in the wilderness. But he went even deeper into that wilderness place of no paths, no control.
Somebody else has to provide for you unless you bring what you need with you.
Yes. Yes. You could have a really large backpack.
Or a flock of sheep.
Or what?
A flock of sheep.
A flock of sheep. That's my dog.
Providing for the beasties, too.
For the beasties, right. That's good.
Apparently there
is
food for sheep.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, so what are the sheep eating in the wilderness?
There must be some sheep food there. Not human food, but sheep.
It doesn't have to be a dry wilderness, though, does
it? It does not. Mm-hmm. You're right, Lois.
But
it's not.
I think most of us think of a wilderness as dry.
Yeah.
That's the classic image, maybe given to us from our tradition, since it sprang from desert, dry desert peoples. So I think whenever we read these biblical passages, we always put it back there in the Mideast, which has more the dry desert than the whole wilderness.
I live in Minnesota, and I always think of wilderness as north woods. Mm-hmm. And a lot, and in the Russian Orthodox Church, they have monasteries above the Arctic Circle.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, I think the Arctic can also be, Baffin Island, for example, can be wilderness.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In a totally different
Absolutely.
Sense. And I also think that we can have an interior wilderness.
Yes.
As well.
Keith, thank you. Wilderness is metaphor. Okay? We have geographic wilderness in our scripture, but the thing that draws us even deeper, going deeper in, is the fact that we have internal wilderness too. So when we hear scripture and we walk into scripture, we need to be aware we're doing it on multiple levels. This isn't about external terrain only. It's about our internal terrain and our internal journey. This is personal. The reason scripture is alive and not dead is because it's still happening. It's alive.
So
the story goes on.
But don't a lot of people take it so literally? I mean, they...
If you only
so
live
does.
In the external piece
yeah.
of it, yeah, you may miss the internal
yeah.
piece. But that's what brings us and our narrative into the larger, overarching God narrative that Scripture gives us. We're living a piece of the story. We're just living it a few years later. Okay? And we can receive surprising insights from understanding that our story is a part of this bigger story. So let's look, we're just going to do one more thing with this before we start with Lexio. Let's look a little bit at what's happening at the beginning of Moses' day. So he gets up, and I have a feeling he has a huge flock of sheep. And there's a little bit of inertia with a huge flock of sheep, so you have to get them going. And I have some friends who are shepherds, and they say that sheep don't follow a person, but rather, maybe there's a lead sheep, if you're lucky, that you herd from the back, trying to bring in all the strays, and hopefully try to keep them going in the direction you have planned for them to go. So Moses' day starts to have a rhythm, yeah? He's got these sheep. Hear all the hooves in that desert floor? Lots of them. There's a rhythm and there's a momentum. So what's our day like? Let's do our day's rhythm. You get up, what do?
Have a
You get dressed. You exercise. What else do?
Brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth, thank you.
Eat breakfast.
Eat breakfast. What? What else?
Go to work.
Go to work. So you've got a rhythm to your day too, right? Huh?
Mm-hmm.
A rhythm that has some inertia to it? That you're used to, and the tendency is to keep up with the beat, isn't it? We're already going.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens in the scripture? Moses sees a bush.
He stops.
And he stops. The rhythm of everything he expected, the rhythm of the day as he had planned, it stops because he stops. It's an important point. I'm going to read the scripture again. And this time I invite you to listen to it and see if there is a word or a phrase or maybe a visual image if you're Trish and an artist. That kind of stands out to you. Either it puzzles you, like that word beyond that puzzled me for decades, or it just intrigues you, or for some reason it just has some meaning to you. You find yourself coming back to that word or that phrase or that image. So listen to this and see what comes out of it for you. Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and see this great sight, and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." Then God said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." God said further, "I'm the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. I invite us to just share the word, the phrase, or the image, no explanation, that you heard. I'll go ahead and start. Mine was turned aside.
That's mine.
Turned aside? Mm-hmm. A lot of people heard turned aside. What other words or phrase or images did people hear?
Hid his face.
Say again?
Hid his face.
Thank you, Jimmy. Hid his face.
Afraid.
Afraid. Yes. Trish, this morning. Yeah, afraid.
The mountain of God.
Mountain of God.
Afraid to look at God.
Afraid to look at God.
Keeping the sheep, I mean, he was sort of like protector. I mean, he had it.
Yeah, keeping the sheep. Yeah.
It's more than one word, but the tone with which God called Moses.
Oh. Was it a different tone than I read it?
I have no idea. There.
Oh, okay.
Well,
I meant for you.
Could be commanding, could be seductive is probably not the right word. Inviting.
Okay.
You read it invitingly.
Okay. A good point. Thank you. That's fine.
I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Yeah.
Comfort.
Yeah.
Holy ground.
Oh, yes. Holy ground. Mm.
It seems to me that his job has become less important. He was worried about the sheep and tending them, keeping his sheep, and all of a sudden, I hear nothing about sheep right now.
Wow. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Wonderful insight.
The fire speaks to me. I see the fire. The orange. Big flames.
Big flames, huh?
But burned but not consumed?
Mm-hmm. Curious.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it would have to be afraid.
Afraid, Daniel?
To look at God, because if I look at God, I would have to accept more.
Mm.
My own boss.
Yeah, this is risky stuff, encountering the text. It's very dangerous for us to do this. And Daniel's exactly right. You have every reason to be afraid of encountering the text. Because of what it might ask of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's a break in the routine, as you said. He has this routine, and we, I can imagine, in our daily routines, if something really extraordinary sets us out of our way, we are concerned about what happens that we're supposed to do according to our routine. And and even if it's something trivial, we have this fear of not getting the things done that we have set our little mental notebook to do that day.
Bingo. Yeah. It's, yeah. I'm sorry, your name again?
John.
John. It's John's, what happened to the sheep? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. We're going to listen. Oh, I'm sorry.
What about the angel? An angel appeared and went to the bush. What happened to the angel?
this didn't. This is the gift of sharing what we heard, because we hear different things, and then we can share the gift of that with each other. So Paula heard something the rest of us hadn't keyed on about what happened to the angel. Thank you, Paula.
Well, if you're looking at it from, I share with Paula, the angel struck me because I immediately thought Spence having a vision that's not of this world, it's not real, and it's something that he's visualizing.
Mm-hmm.
So from a medical point of view, I wonder if this man's having a seizure or something.
Cliff always brings a delightful perspective on this. Again, a gift of a totally different perspective.
Could be.
Who knows?
Cliff, so, I can tell you one thing about that. That I read a book by some guys that from San Francisco who walked in the Brooks Range. And they would occasionally separate themselves from each other and go walking alone. And this man was walking and saw a wolf, and the wolf spoke to him. And he says, dogs never speak to him in San Francisco. But in solitary situations, that when you're not around other people, it's sort of like sensory deprivation. Things come in and speak to you that would not ordinarily.
We're going to listen to the scripture again. And it's always good to have a difference in voices. It would be good to have a male read it the next time, because we'll hear it differently. Like Don pointed out, the tone of invitation by God. What does that sound like? Keith, would you be willing to read this? It starts at 3 and ends at the purpose. So, listen again. You may hear something different because of what the group has heard, or you may hear the same word, phrase, or image. But just listen again and see what comes out of this text for you.
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, I must turn aside and look at this great sight, and see why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called him out of the bush, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. Then he said, Come no closer, remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. He said further, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God.
Whatever you heard in that text, you heard for a reason. There's something in your life, whether it's something going on right now, or something that happened in the past, or perhaps something that you're facing in the future, that influences how we hear or see or interact with any situation. It's who we are. So who we are influences what word, phrase, or image comes to us. There's an interaction here. The person we bring to the text is going to influence what we hear in the text. Does that make sense to people? Does that seem reasonable? Cliff, you're a reason person. Does that seem reasonable?
This seems very reasonable.
If Cliff can buy it, we're okay. We're good ground here. So what I'm going to ask you is something a little more difficult now. I'm going to give you just about a couple of minutes. It'll seem like a long time if you're not used to having a couple minutes. I want you to see if you can figure out why that word or phrase or image caught your attention this morning. What is there going on in your life as to who you are that made that have some significance to you? This is important. It's not a trivial thing. It's a very important thing. What is there that causes that word to have some meaning to you that the other words didn't? So just a couple minutes, ponder. You may uncover some kind of surprises if you spend a little time at whatever level you're comfortable. Let's turn to our neighbor. Do you two want to be with each other or with other people? No. Always good to ask. So we're going to start the break here. Oh, okay, you can put that one too. Perfect. You don't want to be with Daniel? Okay, turn to your neighbor. I don't know if we've got an even number. We'll find out. And at whatever level you're comfortable, we've got just about 2 minutes. Each of you take a minute. Share what came out of that for you. If nothing came out of it, you can share that too. Let's be honest. But let's just talk with each other. Let's see, how are we doing? Okay. Guess what? There's a pattern developing. Guess what we're going to do next? We're going to hear the passage. And this time, Kate, would you mind reading it? I'm going to ask you to listen again. And see what comes out of this passage for you.
Could we follow along in the word?
If you are a visual person and it would help for you to follow along, it's Exodus 3, and we're doing the first 6 verses, so it's a short passage. I'll let you have enough time to get there. But let me just ask you while we're waiting, did you find some connections?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Between the passage and your life? Whatever's going on for you.
And it was different with the different voices.
It is indeed, Pat. The different voices, it's like what Don pointed out. I wonder how God called Moses. Well, depending on who's reading it and on what day they're reading it, mm-hmm. it's going to sound different.
That's why it's because it's alive.
It's because it's alive, and there's even some great insight in just that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
God's voice may sound a little differently at different times to us. So, once again, Kate, it just stops purple and starts there.
Okay.
And Nancy, looking for a verse or a phrase again?
Yes, or an image, Keith.
Image.
A word, phrase, or an image. How is it speaking to you? You may hear it a little differently now that we've spent a little time doing what we just did.
Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro, the priest of Midian. He led his flock beyond the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flame of fire out of a bush. He looked, and the bush was blazing, yet it was not consumed. Then Moses said, "I must turn aside and look at this great sight, and see why the bush is not burned up." When the Lord saw that he had turned aside to see, God called him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses," and he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Come no closer. Remove the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." He said further, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God.
I'm going to go a little deeper. What my God, or the Spirit, or Christ, is saying to you in that word, phrase, or image. We understand where our attraction to that word or phrase or image is coming from in our life. Now, what is trying to be said to us when we look for the sacred in these readings? What's God saying to you, and specifically, you personally? Very quietly, very quietly. If you're comfortable, turn to the same neighbor and just share a little bit about what might come out of this for you. If you're comfortable doing that. We're just going to take just a few sentences. We're only going to take a minute to do this. Just very quietly, whatever you feel comfortable sharing. This brings us back to where we started at the beginning of this hour. And it's to rest in the presence of whatever insights came to you. Don't try to puzzle them. Just let them be. Don't try to figure them out. It was a gift that was given to you, and just accept it. And just be in the presence of this moment, and in the presence of the scripture. We're going to take just a couple minutes of silence. You may want to use the breath prayer or not. Blessings of sacred words and sacred presence in your life, not only now, but for the rest of this day.